All right, I'd like to welcome everyone to today's seminar. This is part of the Risky Learning web seminar series put on by the NIEHS Superfund Basic Research Program. My name is Larry Whitson. I'm a contractor. I work for a company called MDB. And we handle the Superfund Basic Research Program communications. Let me remind those of you connecting to today's seminar by telephone, please place your phone on mute. If you do not have a mute button, you can press *6 to mute your line. When we get to the question and answer period, you can press *6 again to unmute your line. I'd like to welcome in those connected by the over the Internet. The system is a little bit different for you. You're listening to a streaming audio version of the conference line. When we get to the question and answer period, or actually during the entire seminar, please submit questions at any time. At the top of the slides, you will see a question mark button. If you press that button, you will get a small form where you can submit your question. When we get to the question and answer period, I will read those aloud to today's speaker. We'll give everyone just another minute or two to connect. I'd like to thank today's speaker, Dr. Eduardo Saez. He stepped in for Dr. Eric Betterton at the last moment. Dr. Betterton had a scheduling conflict. I'd like now to introduce Monica Ramirez. She's from the University of Arizona. She's the Research Translation Coordinator for the Superfund Basic Research Program at the University of Arizona. Monica?
Thank you, Larry. Once again, my name is Monica Ramirez, and I'm the Research Translation Coordinator at the University of Arizona Superfund Basic Research Program in Tucson, Arizona. The overall goal of our Research Translation Corps is to actively communicate the research products generated by our Superfund program to pertinent audiences and stakeholders in the most appropriate and effective manner. With that said, Region 9 Hazardous Substances Technical Liaison Mike Gill and I have designed a seminar series that has two parts. The first part is called Live at Region 9, where our Superfund investigators from the University of Arizona presented at Region 9 headquarters. And the second part is an Internet seminar, which we are about to hear, that incorporates input from the live presentation that took place in San Francisco. In addition, this web seminar has a live and local audience in the room consisting of 5 Arizona Department of Environmental Quality personnel. Catalytic destruction of PCNTC in soil vapor, laboratory and field studies is the first seminar series out of the 3 that Michael Gill and I will host together this year. Next, we will focus on DINAPLES and mine tailings. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Dr. Eduardo Saez, professor in the Department of Chemical and Environmental Engineering at the University of Arizona. Dr. Saez received his PhD from the University of California, Davis, and has been a member of the University of Arizona faculty for almost 10 years. Prior to that, he was a professor at Simon Bolivar University in Caracas, Venezuela, and more recently a research professor at North Carolina State University. In 1992, he was a Marie Curie Fellow at the University of Bristol, England, and more recently, from 2005 to 2006, Dr. Saez was a visiting scientist at Pacific Northwest National Laboratories. And I will pass it on to Dr. Saez. Thank you.
Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Larry. And welcome, everyone. Good morning or good afternoon. I would like to tell you about our research and field studies on catalytic destruction of perchloroethylene and trichloroethylene in soil vapor extraction gases. I'm going to go to slide 2 now, and I know that most of the audience is familiar with the extent and the problems of contamination with chlorinated hydrocarbons, but I'm going to go through a couple of slides of generalities, and then I will describe the local problem here in Tucson in which we are conducting our pilot studies. So first of all, if we look at motivation, we know that Superfund sites around the United States are contaminated by commercial ventures, usually with chlorinated hydrocarbons. And one of the important risks is the contamination of groundwater. That's specifically the problem that we have here in Tucson. And remediation methods for this type of contamination include gas, liquid, and solid phase sample treatment, soil vapor extraction with posterior activated carbon absorption is a way to remediate volatile solvents from the vadose zone, and that's the one we're going to be talking about today. But you can also treat liquid directly groundwater using pump and treat methods or even soil dredging and treatment. So moving on to slide three, that picture is a picture of Superfund sites all around the U.S. One important aspect of this, as I said, we're going to concentrate on TC and TCE. And in the state of Arizona, 90% of Superfund sites are contaminated with either of these two contaminants. Moving on to the next slide, this is a slide that I borrowed from a recent study by Moran et al. It was published in Environmental Science and Technology. And the interesting thing about this graph here is that the vertical axis shows the fraction of sites, of concentrations actually, in contaminated sites throughout the U.S. that have concentrations that are close to the MCL of different contaminants. And the horizontal axis shows the fraction of samples with detected concentrations of these contaminants. The important thing about this is that if you look at the upper right quadrant, the pink square there, that's the area of most concern because those are contaminants that are present at relatively high concentration and that are present in most sites where contamination exists. So you can see clearly that TCE and PCE belong to that category. Moving to the next slide, I will describe to you the local problem, and this site is the location of our pilot project. And I apologize because the yellow contours to which the legend refers were lost in transit, but essentially the big red elongated blob that you see superimposed on a partial map of Tucson, Arizona in this slide is the Park Euclid Superfund site, and that's the site in which the soil was contaminated mostly by PCE coming from dry cleaning operations. Now, the plume to which the legend refers extends concentrically from the elongated red blob. And just to give you a point of reference, you see three dots in the map labeled UAM 1 to 3. Those are monitoring wells. And in UAM 3, a concentration, those are wells that monitor groundwater, I should have said. In UAM 3, a concentration of about 4.5 parts per billion of PCE was detected a few months ago, and the MCL for PCE in water is 5 parts per billion. So the extent of the contamination is, even though numbers in this area are below the MCL, close to the campus of the university that you can see on the top there, we're getting close to the MCL, so it's a matter of local concern. Going to slide six, one way to treat this subsurface contamination of chlorinated solvents is soil vapor extraction with activated carbon absorption. So this is your typical scheme of the system. You essentially pump air from the vadose zone. The contaminants are volatile, so they're going to be extracted with the air, and then you solve the contaminant onto activated carbon. The most important drawback of this type of process, of course, is that what you're doing is merely transporting the contaminant from a gas phase to a solid phase. Eventually, your carbon will be saturated, and you will have to either regenerate it or dispose of it. So there is no destruction of the contaminant, but just an interface transport. Now, how do we destroy these contaminants? Moving to slide seven, one way we can propose to destroy these contaminants in the gas phase is to perform an oxidation reaction. Now, an oxidation reaction burning the catalyst at very high temperatures, the PCE at very high temperatures, I'm sorry. But we can also perform oxidation of PCE, which is the first reaction in the slide, over a catalyst at more moderate temperatures, that still have to be higher than 500 degrees C. The catalyst used for performing catalytic oxidation of organic compounds, for example, include platinum, palladium, and some other noble metals. But the problem with catalytic oxidation is that, as you can see in the first reaction, it produces chlorine gas, and chlorine gas is a notable poison and the activator for catalysts such as platinum. So oxidation has that drawback, the activation of the catalyst. Another drawback of direct oxidation is that you produce side products, furans and dioxins, that are, as you might know, even more toxic than the original PCE. So this is not a very convenient process from a practical point of view. Now, this is one type of reaction that can occur, the oxidation of the hydrocarbon. We can also hydrodechlorinate. So I would like to skip over the next slide and go directly to slide nine, where you have an alternative reaction, which is the hydrodechlorination of the PCE. That's the first reaction on the slide, in which essentially you react PCE with a reductant, in this case hydrogen gas, to produce ethane and hydrogen chloride. Now, this is a very convenient reaction in the sense that it occurs at much lower temperatures than oxidation, and the products are relatively benign. However, as you can see in the second reaction, that's a side reaction that also occurs. It can produce carbon, which leads to coking of the catalyst. So the activation of the catalyst when you hydrodechlorinate by this pathway is very fast and very terminal. So what's the solution to all this? I mean, we can't do oxidation because of the disadvantages, and reduction is a problem. Well, what we have proposed, and that's the objective of this study, is that if we work at conditions in which we have simultaneously present a reductant such as hydrogen and oxygen, we might be able to reduce the catalyst poisoning effect. And the reason for that is the two reactions that you see in item 2 of slide number 10. We, by the presence of oxygen, hope to oxidize the possible coke that forms on the catalyst, and by the presence of hydrogen, we hope to convert any chloride gas that is produced to hydrogen chloride. Apart from that, we're going to, our main reaction is still going to be the hydrodechlorination of the chlorinated hydrocarbon, but we hope that instead of using hydrogen, which is relatively expensive, we can use alternate reductants, which in this case are going to be simple low molecular weight hydrocarbons. So slide number 11 is a process flow diagram of the way we're doing this in the laboratory. So here we have a reactor that is loaded with a catalyst. The catalyst is a ceramic monolith. This is exactly the same catalyst base that is used in catalytic converters in automobiles. And you can see there the structure of the honeycomb. And we use a catalyst deposited on this honeycomb that is a mixture of platinum and rhodium. We load this into the reactor column, and then at the laboratory scale, we control the concentrations of reductant, in this case hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen using mass flow controllers, and of course the concentration of PCE in the inlet to the reactor. We measure essentially inlet and outlet concentrations of PCE in the reactor to calculate the conversions that we can measure in the laboratory. Slide number 12 is a sample of experimental results. So here I'm showing the percent conversion of PCE in the y-axis as a function of catalyst temperature for different hydrogen to oxygen ratios. The oxygen concentration in all these experiments is 5%, and we vary the hydrogen concentration from 0 to a ratio of 2.15. I'd like to call your attention to the fact that this is a very short residence time in the reactor. It's barely half a second. And the first thing that I want to point out here is that if you look at the lowest curve, which is the curve that corresponds to a hydrogen-oxygen ratio of zero, that would be a case of pure oxidation. There is no hydrogen. And you can see that this catalytic oxidation starts occurring at 350 degrees C approximately. And in this range of temperatures, you don't get a very high conversion by oxidation. This is related to what I was saying before, that you need relatively high temperatures. If you keep going, actually, to higher temperatures than this range, you can essentially achieve 100% conversion at much higher temperatures. Now, here you can see clearly how, as you increase the amount of hydrogen, you increase the conversion, and that increasing conversion happens at lower temperatures as the hydrogen content increases. If you were to go to much higher hydrogen to oxygen ratios, to the point that you have pure hydrogen, you would get really high conversions, but then your catalyst poisons in a matter of minutes. So in experiments we've done, in about an hour, essentially, all the catalyst activity disappears when you have pure hydrogen. But these results that I'm showing here with mixtures of hydrogen and oxygen are repeatable, and they are maintained through a long period of time, as we will see later. Going on to the next slide, those results were based on using hydrogen as a reductant. We've also explored, as I said before, hydrocarbons as reductants, and these are results using propane as a reductant. So this is the same type of plot as before. We're keeping fixed the oxygen concentration, and I'm plotting removal of PCE versus temperature for different propane concentrations, and you can see that the lowest curve, once again, pure oxidation, you barely have a conversion, but as you increase the propane content, then you can see the propane starts acting as a reductant and the conversion goes up. Moving on to slide 14, I'd like to talk about an aspect that I will come back to later. One of the effects that we saw in our experiments, and I'm going to show you some data in a moment, is that the inlet concentration of PCE had an impact on conversion. That is, the higher the PCE concentration at the inlet of the reactor, the lower the conversion. And we modeled this effect, this observation, using a very simple model in which we're considering that the kinetics of PCE conversion on the surface is first order, and that's the first equation in the slide, first order with respect to theta PCE, which is the concentration of PCE on the surface of the catalyst, which we relate to the concentration of PCE in the gas CPCE by the second equation, which is a Langmuir isotherm. So the use of a Langmuir isotherm along with a first-order rate expression means that as you increase the PCE concentration, and that's a characteristic of the isotherm, you saturate the sites on the surface, and therefore you can't keep absorbing PCE, and your efficiency with respect to the reaction goes down. So going to the next slide, number 15, this shows the removal of PCE at a fixed temperature and oxygen and hydrogen contents as a function of PCE concentration. You can see here very clearly in the data the effect that I was talking about. Higher PCE concentration means lower conversion. And the red line is a fit of the very simple model that I just showed you to the experimental data. Moving on to slide 16. Here I'm showing you results of exploring other reductants in the removal of PCE. And let me point out a few notable plots here. The control plot that you can see there is the conversion as a function of temperature when you have only oxidation. Notice that here we're going up to higher temperatures than in the previous plots. And I'm showing you what the effect is to adding to the feed hydrocarbons. And you can see that if we add methane with concentrations up to 5%, methane doesn't have an effect on the control. So essentially, we keep having oxidation, the same thing that happens with pure oxygen. So methane is not, in this range of conditions, a good reductant. For ethane, however, at 2 and 3%, you see an increase in conversion. For propane, you see at even 1% a substantial increase in conversion. And for 1.5% butane, you see a very large increase in conversion, and conversion happening at lower temperatures. Now, the reason for this is we believe that the dissociation energy for the carbon-hydrogen bond decreases as you increase the length of the chain. So, in other words, this is a sort of a justification as to why butane is a better reductant. But this plot quantitatively shows the improvements that you can get by moving up in the chain length. Now, propane is still a very good option here because propane is relatively cheap, and it gives us a good reduction power in a reactor. So moving on to the next slide, number 17, this is a diagram of the pilot scale process that we have located at a soil vapor extraction facility at the Park Euclid site in Tucson that I showed you before. It's very similar to a laboratory scheme. We start with the soil vapor extraction gas, and that is mixed with the reductant that we're using in the field application, which is propane. The mixture goes through the reactor, and then because we produce hydrogen chloride, we pass the exit gas through a scrubber to essentially pass the hydrogen chloride to our water and then vent the gases. I would like to point out that the soil vapor extraction gas from this facility contains PCE, that's the most important contaminant, but it's a very dirty gas in the sense that it contains TCE, as you will see in a moment, and it also has fumes of diesel fuel that belong to a spill that happened at the site. Now, in the next slide, I'm giving you characteristics of the catalyst that we're using at the field site, which is exactly the same using a catalytic converter in an automobile. And these, the active catalyst that we're using is either platinum and rhodium or palladium and rhodium. The results that I'm going to show you and the results that I've been showing you correspond to platinum rhodium catalysts. And here you can see some of the characteristics of the converter in general. Moving on to the next slide, we can see pictures of the field site. This is our pilot project. And on the picture on the right, you can clearly see the catalytic converters. There are two of them. They have insulation around them, and there is a temperature control system with a heater. You can also see at the bottom of the picture on the right the pump providing the SVE gas to the reactors. Going to the next slide, number 20. These are the conditions in our field study. Once again, that's the type of catalyst that we're using. The range of temperature is 450 to 650 degrees C, still not quite into the full oxidation range. And an important piece of information here is that in our design, we have a 0.2 second residence time through the reactor. And we're using, as I said before, propane as a reductant. Going on to slide 21, the first thing that you would do in the application to the field site is to determine when the reductant is going to be efficient. So this is a plot that shows at the field site the removal of PCE, TCE, and DCE that were present in the SVE gas as a function of concentration of propane in the feed. Now, these data here are really at different temperatures, so you should look at these data more from the qualitative point of view. What I'm trying to illustrate here is that if you increase the concentration of propane, you clearly get into a regime in which essentially you destroy all the chlorinated hydrocarbons. So for 2%, you can see that the conversions for a 0.2 second residence time are around 100%. So we decided to use a propane content that would give us good conversions, so we use 2% propane. Moving on to slide 22, this is a slide that is a little busy, but I'm presenting here the results of an extended operation of these reactors at the Park Euclid site. And you can see that the time axis extends to 240 days, so we're talking about a good portion of a year here. And the right vertical axis show the percent removal of the target compounds, and the points corresponding to that axis are enclosed by the ellipse on top. So you can see that the conversion of both TCE and TCE during the extended operation of this reactor is very close to 100%. This is important because this shows that there is no deterioration of catalyst activity through a very long period of time, which is a very attractive feature of this process. Another interesting thing about this plot is that on the left-hand side, the vertical axis shows the concentration of TCE, that's the blue line, the blue dots, and TCE in the soil vapor extraction gas during the 240 days of operation. You can see that the concentration of both contaminants in the SVE gas has been drifting upwards. And we're not exactly sure quantitatively why this trend is occurring, but this system wasn't operating for a while before it was started at time zero. So we think that the hydrocarbons are being incorporated into the SVE gas as time goes by. But the important thing is that even though the concentrations are changing appreciably, you can see that in this range of concentrations, even though, as I showed you before, an increase in TCE concentration could lead to a decrease in conversion, we're not seeing any effect in this range, and we're still getting 100% conversion, even at the highest concentration of TCE and TCE in the SVE gas. Moving on to the next slide, this is a very rough and very brief estimation of costs. The estimation of costs that we're showing here is based on the use of propane in the field reactor and on the use of activated carbon if you had a simple absorption system. So for our catalytic converter, we assume for this calculation a constant TCE concentration in the SVE gas of about 200 parts per million. We estimate, of course, a volume for calculation of the cost of vapor treated, and using 2% propane with the cost of propane specified there, we calculate an approximate cost of about $10 per pound of PCE destroyed in our system. Now, if you were to use activated carbon, the cost that we estimate is about $3.5 per pound of PCE absorbed on the carbon. You can see that even though this calculation shows that our operating cost is higher, you have to take into account that, well, we're still kind of competitive, we're in the same range, but one interesting thing is that our cost is not PCE concentration dependent, in the sense that if we increase the concentration of PCE, we're still going to destroy it with the same amount of propane used as long as the concentration doesn't get too high. So if we increase the amount of PCE destroyed, our cost actually goes down, whereas the cost of carbon will remain the same. So if the site is contaminated with a higher concentration of PCE, we can get to be exactly competitive and maybe even better. Moving on to the next slide, there are two directions in which we want to take this work. We have, right now we've been working on an SBIR project, a phase one, with a local company in Tucson, Hydrogeochem, and we're hoping to move to phase two. this is from the point of view of the application to the field site. We would like to use our system in other sites, for example, in the Phoenix area, and we think that this type of scheme can work for other types of contaminants, such as prions. And on the research side, we understand that what we're doing, we're actually having oxygen and a reductant present at the same time, essentially we're avoiding the activation of the catalyst, but we still don't understand the mechanism from a point of view of what's happening at the surface. So we're hoping to understand the chemistry of the process a little better in the future. Going on to the slide 25, the conclusions of this is that you can use this technology under the simultaneous presence of a reductant and oxygen for long-term applications with catalyst stability. And the most effective reductant that we can use, and mostly because of cost, is propane, but it works very well, as I have showed you in this talk. And laboratory studies show that this works under a very wide range of conditions, and here I mean temperature, concentration of contaminants, and concentration of reductant and oxygen. So with that, I'd like to move on to the question phase of the presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Saez. Okay, let's begin with just a little bit of instruction for the Internet participants. If you are looking at the Internet version of the slides, at the top next to the navigation buttons, you'll see a question mark. You can hit that question mark. You'll get a little form which you can fill out to submit your questions. I'll then read those out to today's speaker. For those of you connected on the telephone, you can ask your question just by taking your phone off mute. We'll go to the audience in just a minute and ask for questions. You can take your phone off mute and ask your question. I'd like to request that you introduce yourself and name your organization. And let's begin with those who are on the phone. If anyone has a question for Dr. Saez, you can take your phone off mute, and please introduce yourself and name your organization. Okay, let's take a question from, I have Larry Reed, also from MDB, in my office, and he has a question. Go ahead, Larry.
Dr. Saez, question for you. You mentioned that at the higher concentrations, the treatment technology is even more cost effective. I guess a question would be, in meeting the MCL levels, is the technology able to meet those MCL levels for drinking water when we're applying it at your location there?
Well, this is a gas-based treatment, so the answer would be yes, in the sense that at the conditions that we're working right now, essentially we have 100% destruction of all the contaminants. So our concentration at the exit is virtually zero compared to the levels of the soil vapor extraction gases, of course, which are of the order of tens or hundreds of ppms. So at that level, the destruction of the gases is complete. So we don't have any issues with remaining contaminants in the exit gas from that point of view.
I think Larry has a follow-up.
Dr. Stein, it's just a question. You mentioned where you have applied the technology. Are you looking for other recommended sites where you could take the technology and apply them there also?
Yes, actively, and One of the things about this technology is that we think that we can treat other types of compounds, and I mentioned freons, and there are sites in which contamination with freons is an issue, and we hope, because of the chemical similarities of those systems, that we can apply this type of technique to that type of contaminants too. But yes, we're looking around for other sites in which PCE, TCE, or other similar contaminants can be treated by this technique.
Okay, let's stay with the phone participants. If you have a question, please take your phone off mute and please introduce yourself and name your organization.
Hi there, I have a question.
Right ahead.
My name is Melissa Zagola. I work for ICF International. I'm new to the industry and I'm certainly not a chemist, so I have a very basic question. Why did you again choose propane over butane as a reductor?
The choice of propane essentially was because of availability and cost essentially. Butane at the same concentration can be more effective, but it's also more expensive when you look at acquiring the gas in commercial quantities. So we think that propane, because it's so easy to find and it's so cheap, would be a good alternative. So all the gases we've seen, these would be the cheapest, let's say, that can give us a 100% conversion.
Okay, so I understand. Thank you.
It was just a matter of availability and cost, essentially.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's go ahead and stay with the phone participants. If you have a question, please take your phone off mute, and please introduce yourself and name your organization. Okay, while we're letting the phone participants get their thoughts together, I'll read one from one of our internet participants. Forgive me if I get the name wrong. This is from Arthur Deek with Advanced Geoenvironmental Incorporated in Stockton, California. Arthur asks, did the GAC treatment cost comparison include the costs of periodic carbon changeout?
Yes, the cost that we're reporting there per pound of carbon includes disposal and change of carbon to new carbon, essentially. So that's the answer is yes, it's included in the calculation.
Thank you. I have another question from an internet participant. This is from Michael Laney with Lockheed Martin in Marietta, Georgia. Could this be adapted to be used as an off-gas treatment after groundwater treatment through an air stripper?
Yes, I think so. Actually, that's one of the applications we've been thinking about. We haven't done anything, but we think that that's a good idea, essentially, because if you're going to strip the contaminants from the aqueous phase into a gas, that would be ideal for this process. One thing that you might wonder is if the presence of water vapor, for example, in a stripping gas would be detrimental to this process. And we have looked into that, and a saturated stream in terms of water vapor doesn't change the performance of the catalyst. So the answer is yes, and we thought about it, and we think it can work.
Okay, let's check back with our phone participants. If you have a question, please take your phone off mute and introduce yourself, name your organization. Okay, we'll stick with the internet participants. This is from Glenn McKay, Warrington Township in Warrington, Pennsylvania. Please comment on comparisons of methods relative to initial capital cost of systems for catalytic converter versus carbon. Does carbon operating cost include replacement of carbon filters? The last question, I guess. And is there any residual cost in disposition of used filters? I assume that's referring to the disposal issue. Any further comments? You provide example of plume in your presentation. Do you project any cost versus percentage reduction of PCE in the monitoring wells? There was a lot there. Let me know if I need to repeat any of it, Dr. Saez.
Let me take the question in the middle. The cost of filters and disposal of filters wasn't considered in our calculation. Our calculation was based on utilization of carbon, so there were no fixed cost in the calculation. Actually, one notable cost that wasn't included was the cost of the reactor and the catalyst. So it was just operating costs, propane versus carbon utilization and nothing else. As I said before, it's just a preliminary calculation. Can you read me the first part of the question again, Larry, please?
Yes, let me read it, and I might be able to clarify it a bit. He's asking for comments on comparisons of the methods relative to the initial cost of the systems for the catalytic converter system versus the carbon system.
Okay, so that would be the initial cost. We haven't done those cost estimations. We imagine that in terms of a catalyst and the installation of the reactor and the heater control, we're going to have costs that are going to be comparable and perhaps a little higher than those of the activated carbon system. But our hope is that through a long operating time, those costs, those differences are going to be minimized. Moving on to the last part of the question, that's a very interesting point. I mean, if we could relate the type of destruction that we can do with these systems to the remediation of the site, that's something that I'm afraid is still in the future. We haven't gone into those types of calculations, but right now this is a pilot scale project, so the soil vapor extraction unit that is installed is not really a remediation unit in itself, but it's just a pilot scale unit. So a much bigger effort in terms of remediation would have to be undertaken to do that. But that's a very interesting question.
Okay, let's check back with the phone participants. If you've got a question, you can take your phone off mute, but please introduce yourself and name your organization.
Hi, this is Todd Bragdon with CDM in Denver. I just had a couple questions on the setup of the unit. On slide 17, following the scrubber, there looks to be a GAC unit at the end of it. I was wondering if you could just comment on the purpose of that, since we're kind of comparing the pilot test versus GAC performance. I assume it has something to do with the final polish, but just curious. And then also, could you touch on the types of metallurgical problems that you are experiencing or how you're handling it regarding the production of HCl gas?
Yeah, those are two very good questions. The first question, the venting of the scrubber is in the field project sent to the GAC unit that is in place. The reason for doing that is because this is an experimental system, so we didn't want to risk venting gases to the atmosphere with contaminants, especially the first time we installed it. So it's just a safety feature. Our outlet from the scrubber doesn't go to the atmosphere, goes to the GAC tanks because they were available essentially. So just a safety thing. But looking at the performance of our reactor, it's completely unnecessary for the operation that we've been pursuing. Now, with regards to the second question, yes, metallurgical problems, we've had a few. Our first scrubber was stainless steel, and because of the high acid content, it was a very preliminary design. Because of the high acid content in the liquid, it was completely corroded and had to be replaced. And we are not experts in scrubbing very acidic liquids, but we are hoping that there are units out there that can do the job for us. So we haven't been too worried about it, but the important consequence of the question is that I'm sure that that will add to our costs, having an appropriate scrubbing unit.
Okay, let's stay with the phone participants. You can take your phone off mute. Please introduce yourself and your organization. Okay, let me read another one from an internet participant. This is from Stefan Kemstaz in Germany, in Gresham, Germany. Have you also tested the effectiveness of the process with less chlorinated ethanes, like DCE and VC, which are often present together, or present with PCE and TCE? Parenthetically, he adds, in water, these compounds are not so rapidly reduced, so what does this mean for the gaseous phase? And the final part of the question is, does it also work with chlorinated methanes?
Okay, let me take the first part of the question. When we tried the field site, and that's slide 21, when we tried the effect of propane concentration on the field site, and that's showed on slide 21, we measured PCE, TCE, and DCE, so a less chlorinated similar compound, and you can see that the conversion of DCE was comparable to the conversions of TCE and PCE. We have not tried any single carbon chlorinated hydrocarbon, but we think that we could get good conversions for those two. But we've been essentially concerned with TCE and TCE mostly in this project. But that's something that I guess we need to explore at one point in the future.
Okay, let's check back to the phones. If you have a question, please introduce yourself and your organization. Okay, I have another one from, this is from Walter Weining with Golder Associates in Lakewood, Colorado. How precisely does the mix of reductant and oxygen need to be controlled to avoid catalyst poisoning?
Okay, that's another very good question. Let me tell you about the field operation. In the field operation, unfortunately, we cannot control that in the sense that since we're using SVE gas, the oxygen is provided with the SVE gas, of course. And oxygen concentrations in that SVE gas range for about from about 15 to about atmospheric 20% oxygen. Now, in the laboratory, we have tested the ratio of oxygen to reductant that you need to have to get a stable operation of the catalyst. And our tests, we're still working on it, but our tests indicate that a 1 to 2% oxygen concentration, and maybe even down to 0.5% oxygen concentration, can give you a stable catalyst performance when you're using this range of concentrations of TCE and reductant. So, in other words, in the field, we have an excess of oxygen with respect to catalyst stability and also with respect to conversion, because in the laboratory we have found out that oxygen actually reduces the conversion of the chlorinated hydrocarbons. That is, in the laboratory, when we use 20% oxygen, we get lower conversions at shorter residence times than those reported here than when we use 1% oxygen. So in other words, the natural oxygen in the field is decreasing our efficiency, but even so we get good conversions. So the answer to the question would be, from our measurements right now, we think you can go down to 0.5% oxygen and still have a stable catalyst operation. But again, if you go up to 20%, your catalyst is still stable, but oxygen works against you.
Okay, let's see. I've got 150. We've got a few more minutes. Let's check back to the phone participants. Please ask your question. Introduce yourself and name your organization as well, please. Well, I hope I'm giving the phone participants enough time. Please interrupt me if I'm cutting you off before you get a chance to ask your question. I've got another one here from an internet participant. This is from Sajid Barless with the Ministry of Environment in Fort St. John, Canada. Sajid asks, could this be used to... Let me start that over. Could this be used to destroy mercaptans and hydrogen sulfide gases in a gaseous waste stream that primarily contains methane?
Well, I would have to think about that.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't have an answer for that. I'm afraid I'm not that familiar with the chemistry of mercaptans. One thing is that if they can be reduced, the presence of methane would help in that case. But I should point out, though, that in a concentrated hydrocarbon stream, there is a bit of a problem, because if you get to a point at which you start converting the methane, say, the gas mixture can ignite. And essentially what happens there is that your temperature goes to very high temperatures, and it's really hard to control if you ignite the methane or any other hydrocarbon. So we try to stay away from the ignition point of all these hydrocarbons, which might be a problem if you have a concentrated stream.
Okay, let's check back to the phone participants. I think we might have gotten through all of them. I'm going to do a little bit of closing housekeeping here. If there are still participants on the phone, I'll give you one more chance in about a minute. Let me just note, I'd like to thank everyone for participating in today's seminar, the audience. I'd like to also thank Monica Ramirez and particularly Dr. Saez, who stepped in with little notice to cover for Dr. Betterton, who had a scheduling conflict. I'd like to point out on the seminar webpage where the information for this seminar is located, there is a button for a feedback form. Please use this. You can submit any comments on today's seminar. You can also submit any comments or requests for additional seminars from the Superfund Basic Research Program on this form. So anyway, please fill that out. We do review all of the suggestions that are submitted, and we have both offered seminars based on those comments. So I would encourage you to use the feedback form, please. Also note that there is contact information on that page. If there are additional questions that come up after today's session, please feel free to submit those questions to us by email, and I will forward those on to Dr. Saez and or Dr. Betterton for answers. Let's check back to the phone participants one more time, and I'll check with the internet question list one more time. And Monica, if you have any closing comments, this would be a really good time.
I would just like to thank everyone for participating, and please be in contact with us if we can help you out with any of the information presented or any information beyond what was presented today. In addition, we have a website which goes into detail about all our projects at the University of Arizona Superfund Basic Research Program, and that web address is www.superfund.pharmacy.arizona.edu, and that is Arizona spelled completely out. And again, I'd like to thank you for your participation, and on behalf of the Research Translation Corps team at the University of Arizona, thank you for participating.
Let's check back, since I promised the phone participants I'd come back to them one more time. This is the last chance. We'll close the seminar if there are no further questions. But for the phone participants, if you have another question, please take your phone off mute and introduce yourself and name your organization. Okay, now I'm thoroughly convinced that we've gotten through all the questions. This is great. There have been one or two other questions come in that have come in on the internet, and I usually get a few more, Dr. Saez, so I will forward those to you by email. And also let me thank one more time all of today's participants, and especially Monica Ramirez and Dr. Eduardo Saez from the University of Arizona. And I point out the feedback form that you can use. It's accessed from the seminar webpage, and you can submit comments to us on today's seminar, as well as any of the other Risky Learning seminars, and also request future seminars. With that, I'll close out. Thanks again, Monica and Dr. Saez, and we'll sign off.